Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Good morning, Courtney. How are you feeling?
Good morning, Curtis. I feel a little bit better today, and let me tell you, backed into my parking spot this morning.
Oh, thank God.
First try.
You can never be too safe.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a young mom.
Exactly.
You don't want to have that Brooksy have to deal with any accidents when you're departing. Shime, how are you?
I'm fabulous, Curtis. It's Friday. Can't complain.
So my badge still doesn't work in the main entry point. It works here at WEEI and Odyssey. But when I have to get my parking pass validated.
Okay.
Because my badge doesn't get me in and out of the garage.
I thought Mingles came in yesterday and fixed it all.
So the part where Odyssey controls, I'm good to go.
Okay.
I'm still making $16 an hour, and that should clear into my direct deposit in 2 weeks. However, someone at WGBH deactivated my key card for no apparent reason. Mark Mingles is the jack of all trades, the nicest
best
person, just unbelievably kind, generous guy. The guy that gets asked to do anything and everything and never complains a single time. He's like the opposite of me. Somebody at WGBH just deactivated my card. Interesting to note, when I was driving in yesterday morning, I saw Big Show Andy, who hates my guts, and it clicked this morning, walking into WGBH. Legitimately, like, he used to, like, try and get me fired.
Oh, gosh.
He came in the morning once and, like, tried to, like, confront me when I was working on Kirk and Callahan. Like, literally insane person. And so, I don't know. Well, maybe not insane. He just had an insane amount of hate for me.
My first internship was working with Andy.
Yeah, not a fan of mine.
Did he like you?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
He didn't love me the first day because I think I, like, knocked his sandwich over. But right, outside of that, he liked me.
Right.
Yeah. He did a great job with the Weiner line. But, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know.
So you think that there's some kind of Curtspiracy going on. I would like to dive deeper in.
Right. Like, well, why would I be the only person whose WGBH key card was deactivated?
Oh, yeah, no, clearly somebody saw your name and was like, yeah, this guy doesn't want to work here. Click.
Yeah. Click. So maybe it wasn't him. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it. But nonetheless, we are here today. Robert Splane's going to join us at 7:15 on a Patriots Friday. We're going to get to some really, I think, pretty interesting and noteworthy sound that was on Rich, Ken, and Ted yesterday, coming up in my lead, where Tom Curran discussed the talent level and the lack of a disparity between that of Devin Witherspoon and Christian Gonzalez. And we have a big, big night tonight, Courtney. We have the return of Rafi Devers to Fenway Park.
Nope.
So will there be a Kelly Olynyk-style Jumbotron welcome?
No.
You don't think so, Rafi? I think there might.
Do they, like, how often do the Red Sox do that for returning players? Because, I mean, if they do it quite often. If they're willy-nilly like the Celtics are, then I would say absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember a ton of former Red Sox players returning to Fenway and getting that.
I think what they'll do is there will be some I don't know. That's a good point. What have the Red Sox ever done like a video montage for the return of I'm trying to think. Well, I was one of the OG moments was 05 or 06 when Johnny Damon signed with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the peak of the war between Boston and New York. And they had the throws like Mary, acts like Judas shirts outside of Fenway. And it was, there was no video, there was nothing, and it was like, will they boo, will they cheer? And that was like literally 3 months of sports talk radio on WEEI.
According to Google AI, examples of recent video tributes for returning players include Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Brock Holt.
Okay, so he's going to get one.
We did one for Brock Holt? I mean, I love Brock Holt. The Brock
I think
Brock
because
Holt
of all the loved, stuff he though. Did, like with like the Jimmy Fund yeah. and all that stuff.
Right.
Because he was, one year, he was the Jimmy Fund captain, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, no. I mean, Brock Holt is, as philanthropic as they come, one of the best people to come through Boston, no matter the Red Sox, any team.
If that's the case, if those names are the case, then I would say absolutely he does get one. You bring up Johnny Damon. I don't know if anybody else is watching Below Deck this season. Below Deck Med. Tom, you're my only hope here. No. Okay, well.
Below Deck Med? Oh, Mediterranean?
Mediterranean, yeah.
Big
Johnny
fan
Damon.
Of Below Deck. Haven't watched this season, though.
Johnny Damon on this season again.
Again?
Again. He loves going on Below Deck.
Hell yeah.
And he was great. His wife was great. He had a friend with him who was a Boston guy who is probably the worst charter guest they've ever had. Like the rudest. Worst guest
oh,
of all
man.
Time. They did give the biggest tip I've ever seen, though, for the group. $50,000 a tip.
Damn. That's pretty good.
So that's divided by how many people?
Like it ended up being like around $4,000 a person.
Wow.
I mean,
Below Deck looks lovely. Very good show. I used to watch. I mean, it's the perfect show where you see the richest people act like the biggest douches, and they know.
Johnny Damon is not a douche, though. He is very, very kind.
Also, isn't he like part owner of the Lowell Spinners now?
Yeah.
There you go.
It really is. So Rafi Devers comes back tonight. Craig Breslow, who we have given a hard time to, who I thought his job was on the line when the team was scuffling and had the same record under Tracy.
Good morning.
Good morning, Craig. Those boos are gone. The Devers deal last year in making the playoffs remains one of the more shocking outcomes considering the outrage. You sweep the Yankees and you trade Devers. You get worse and then you get better. So Rafi's back in town tonight. But to me, I don't know how we can further the Gonzalez story other than I'm just curious, Courtney. Why shouldn't the Patriots, outside of, as you said yesterday, some crazy escalator clause where he gets a perpetual raise every year based on the cap and all this stuff, why paying market value for Christian Gonzalez would be bad for the Patriots?
It's not. And even Wiggy arguing yesterday, it's got to be, you know, the upfront signing bonus. Like the fact that if that's what we're holding this entire situation up on,
yeah.
It all falls on the crafts. That's why, to me, I think, and Greg originally brought up this report, I think that there is some type of escalator clause and he's not budging on it. I don't care that it's never been done before. I don't care that it falls on his agent. If that's what they asked for and the Kraft said absolutely not, which I don't blame the Krafts for doing, and they haven't moved off of it, that's the only thing I can think of. Because I do think that the Krafts, while you may want to call them cheap and look at years past, I think Robert's trying to turn the tides right now and show who he is and show how much money he has. And I don't think asking for $64 million at signing is the thing that Robert Kraft would say no about. Like, I don't think the afterpay, I know we keep joking on that, Klarna, is the model that would hold up something from keeping the best corner in the league from being on this Patriots team this season.
Yeah, I feel like overpaying is always just sort of in the eye of the beholder. Like, the Patriots need Christian Gonzalez to get where they want to go. We all agree. In the absence of Christian Gonzalez, this team is no longer a Super Bowl contender. Correct, Shine?
I would say yes.
So you sit here, you got better this offseason, all the drama, the nonsense of the off-field crap this past, 6 months has gone away. You have, in my view, one of the top five coaches in the NFL. You have a top five quarterback in the NFL. You have a top five receiver room in the NFL. You have Ramondre Stevenson, who we literally haven't mentioned at all. And you're ready to go, and you're sitting here, and you have this offer. You have this deal that was just consummated with Witherspoon and the Seahawks, who you're playing in, 2 weeks, that gives you the exact parameters by which you should sign Christian Gonzalez with. And in my view, when Robert Kraft began the camp talking openly about the negotiation, you cannot begin the training camp session and the opening of the 2026 season by talking openly about private contract negotiations and then turtle and use the media as a pawn to get your message out there after. You can't stand there and say, we've offered him the highest paid contract in the history of the Patriots, the highest paid corner, and then now that Witherspoon got more money than you thought he would, you now send little notes out to Greg Bedard or whomever else and say, probably not Bedard, they don't like Bedard, but you send notes out to people in the media and try and get a message that forces Gonzalez to answer things that may or not be true.
But how could you not have been prepared for this exact number?
Right.
Like, that's the thing that bugs me, is it's like, Witherspoon didn't get more money than we thought. Like, he set the market by $1 million. It's not like he got exponentially more than what Trent McDuffie just got. You knew what the price was going to be. The price tag has been the same all along. We've been saying it now for months before Witherspoon signed. We said, you're going to have to owe Christian Gonzalez probably about $105 million in guaranteed money, 4 years, $135 to $140 total money on the deal. Like, that's what we knew what the price was going to be all along, and just so happens that's exactly what the price is. So I don't understand how they could lack the foresight to know that this is the situation. Like, that, this, you needed to be in this range in both the total money in the contract and the guaranteed money.
Maybe they thought they would get ahead of it. Maybe they thought that they would precede the Witherspoon deal.
But even if they did, like, okay, so if what Robert Kraft said is true, then that means that they offered Christian Gonzalez more money than Trent McDuffie. Well, Devin Witherspoon only got like $1 million more than Trent McDuffie when it comes to guaranteed money. So just give Christian Gonzalez another million or two on the guaranteed money. Everybody wins. Like, it's not $2 million would never hurt the Kraft's pockets ever.
Right. No. And even if it was $10 million, it wouldn't impact the bottom line. It wouldn't impact the roster's ability, their ability to build a roster that would be championship driven or champion capable of winning a championship. The whole thing is just so tedious. And the people, the afternoon show, Rich Ked and Ted did a poll yesterday where they asked if, you know, who's to blame for where the team is. And it was basically 54-46 that the team was wrong, 46% that Gonzalez is greedy. I am desperate to hear from people who think that the Patriots are right to not pay Gonzalez what he thinks he's worth. And I would love to hear why, because I don't understand it. I'm not a very bright person, but I need to have someone who thinks that that Gonzalez is wrong explain to me, like I'm five, why that is the case.
And I know that a lot of people don't put a lot of stake in what we're seeing from joint practice. Like, we all make fun of the sub stackers, et cetera. But Mego was on with Jones and Keefe yesterday and talked about how the defense has looked without Christian Gonzalez. Like, that is only helping Christian Gonzalez when it comes to fandom and people having his side for the Crafts to get this done. Like, the longer they hold out, I think the swing may go towards Christian Gonzalez, unless we don't see Christian Gonzalez week one and the Pats defense looks unbelievable and all of a sudden they're looking at him like, well, you kind of shot yourself in the foot.
Oh, I think people are mad at Christian Gonzalez if he's not on the field week one, regardless. Regardless of the performance of the team. Yeah, I think if he's not on the field, people are going to turn on Gonzalez immediately. Like, this deal needs to be done by week one. Otherwise, people are going to turn against him. Like, dude, what are we doing?
So then,
like,
if that's the case, doesn't that help the Crafts not wanting to?
The longer it goes, it looks. Just because of what Robert Kraft has already said in the media, it looks better for Kraft the longer it goes, because it's like, dude, we offered you this contract, you're being unreasonable. Especially if it comes out that at the end of the day, he just signs for $2 million more, $3 million more guaranteed than Devin Witherspoon. Like, that's just going to be like, look, the Crafts are going to be like, look, we told you this in training camp, that we offered him this contract to be the highest paid corner, and he was being unreasonable. He wasn't accepting. So, like, as much as we may dislike the process. Like, if that's true, if all that's true and we see it in the new contract that he eventually gets, like, it's immediately going to be on Gonzalez.
So I see the Twitch saying that he's always injured. That's why you don't do this. First of all, he's not.
He played 30 games the last 2 years. He was injured 1 year, really, which was his rookie year. He only played 4 games that had that shoulder injury, which is just kind of like a freak injury that's probably not really ever going to happen again. And then last year, he had the sore hammy to start the season and then played every single game once it came back.
So Gonzalez was injured a few games last year, came back, and was your best player in the Super Bowl. Would you rather how did it hurt you? How would it hurt you going forward if he misses 6 games a year but plays in the most important ones in the playoffs and dominates?
Like, it would have been nice to have him in week 1 last year. That might have been a win against the Vegas Raiders, or in week 2 against the Steelers. Like, one of those games might have been a win. But at the end of the day, it didn't really impact you because you were still in a Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, you didn't need the home field advantage in the playoffs last year. You ended up beating the Broncos in Denver and going to the Super Bowl, where he was the best player you had on the field.
So the last 2 years, he has played 34 games, including the playoffs.
I didn't even count the playoff games.
And he was your best player in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yep.
Basically in that entire playoff run.
Right. But exactly. Shut down the opponent's best receiver each game.
Yep.
Was your best player in the Super Bowl by a relatively wide margin. And why would you not want that person on your team? It is so silly. So you'd rather have him for 0 games to save Robert Kraft money as opposed to 14 out of 17 regular season game in every playoff game.
And, like, paying him doesn't preclude you from paying Drake May either. Like, there's plenty of money in the cap. Like, there's plenty of money the Krafts have. Didn't they just get that, like, private investment money that they could for the 10%
they sure did.
Of the,
yeah. They got several billion dollars in cash.
Yeah, so they have plenty of cash flow to pay both Drake May and Christian Gonzalez. And, like, outside of that, the highest paid player on the team is what? Milton Williams?
Yeah.
Like, it's not some outrageous amount of players that are getting paid. Like, it's very simple to pay 2 guys top-end money on an NFL team out of 53 players.
We're going to get to the leads coming up in just 2 minutes, and I cannot wait for you all to hear the audio from Tom Curran from yesterday's Rich, Ken, and Ted program saying something I never heard prior to this contractual stalemate. Interesting how that works. We'll get to all that in just 2 minutes.
It's 93.7 WEEI, Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson, 617-779-7937, and our good buddy Tom E. Curran. He has been down there watching all the chaos between the Eagles and between the Patriots and A.J. Brown, apparently seeing Jalen Hurts and them, like, talking to each other and dapping each other up and high-fiving and planning a nice breakfast meeting later on. I don't know. But apparently they put all their hate behind them for the cameras to all see. And Tommy Curran, I'm sure that will be his next big story about how to get along with your ex-teammates. Maybe Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum could take some notes. Tommy, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Who cares?
Well, the Eagles media apparently does. They swarmed him about that, did they not, A.J. Brown?
Their hands are touching. Okay, great. Yeah, what's going on? It was. I'll tell you what, Rich, it was really eye-opening for me, and this is kind of the point that I'll make on Quick Slants, which is on tonight at 6 o'clock. Relative to my expectations coming into this 2 days' worth of practice, the Patriots were jaw-droppingly competent. You know, 2 years ago, they were embarrassed. They were not ready for NFL participation when they saw the Eagles. And I still felt that the talent, especially in the Eagles' defense, was probably going to shine a light on some of the deficiencies the Patriots had along their offensive line with their running game. And that didn't happen. They were really, really, really good relative to my expectations. And I didn't think it was going to happen that way. So good news for Patriot fans.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to see, obviously. And you know, speaking of A.J. Brown and everything out there, just kind of just tell me how camp has been, like, watching A.J. Brown with this offense. Has it evolved? Has he gotten more chemistry over these past couple of weeks with Drake May? How's he look?
He's a 10. He really is. I've watched, you know, I'm lucky. We're all lucky. I particularly feel that I'm lucky. This is going to be my 30th friggin' season covering the team.
Nice.
And I had Olive Brady, and I had Bledsoe, and I had Terry Glenn. I know what a good player looks like, and it's been a while,
at that position. I know what really good offense looks like, whether it's Gronkowski or Moss or all the players we got to see. And it's been a while since I've seen a player as talented as A.J. Brown on the receiving end of things, whether it be Edelman or Gronkowski. It's probably since then. You know, you'd have stray nice catches by a Tyquan Thornton. You'd have stray nice catches by Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty routine that he's doing really solid. He's doing spectacular stuff and also pedestrian stuff with relative ease. So talked to Julian Edelman this week, and I said, would you imagine that he's going to be featured the way guys like Davante Adams and Brandon Marshall were for Josh McDaniels? And he said, 100%. So that means 150, 160 targets is something that Julian would not be surprised by.
TC, I'm curious how you would describe this offense for the Patriots, you know, with the addition of A.J. Brown and even Romeo Doubs and, you know, even just some depth that's tied in. The offensive line seems to be improved. The running back room is just improved from last year. Would you describe this offense? Is it weaponized? Is it a high-octane offense? How would you kind of encapsulate what you think this offense can be?
Yeah, again, at the risk of putting myself out there and sounding too optimistic, it's very, very explosive. It should be a 26, 27 to 30 point a game offense.
Love it.
And we did. I wrote so many stories the last few years about just the ineptitude, whether it be where they were finishing on third down, where they were finishing in goal to go situations. Last year they sucked in goal to go. They were an embarrassment. And they weren't that much better inside the red zone. And we watched some red zone today, and they weren't perfect, but they're so much better because of the weapons that they have, whether it's Brown, whether it's Mays decision making, whether it's Doubs. Demario Douglas should be a better red zone weapon than he has been because of his quickness, even though he's a smaller fella. They're just, again, at the risk of me having my face rubbed in it later on, they're really, really, really tough.
How's the rookie class looking, Tommy?
That's a little bit more TBD, jury's out. Mm-hmm. I think that Momu is a jury's out situation. I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to get better. He's probably got the highest learning curve of the three. And I'm just really kind of sticking with the top three. Mm-hmm. I think Akis has looked good. He's got the simple elements of athleticism, speed, power that should make him relevant. And the Patriots defense over the last couple days started out very well against the Eagles. Actually, yesterday the Eagles offense played much better than the Patriots defense, and then it leveled out. Today was kind of the flip. The Patriots defense settled down after a quieter start. But they did generate more pressure than you would have thought. And Elijah Ponder was part of the guys who was generating pressure. So they feel okay about it. Akis should be a part of that. And Lomo, I think, still needs to really grow. Did I already do Lomo?
You did a little Lomo, but first. What about Raritan? What do you think of him?
Raritan's been really good. Just it's been a long time since the Patriots drafted a tight end who had any relevance at all. A really long time, probably since 2010. So it's good to see a guy come in and be able to master the quote-unquote learning curve that we've already always attributed to them not being able to succeed when they joined this team.
All right, so Tommy Curran, I think there was an unrealistic expectation amongst a lot of people that as soon as Devin Witherspoon ended up getting his deal, then bang, Christian Gonzalez would end up having things in writing and everything would be great in Gillette Stadium and he would be back on the team ready to play. That did not happen. It has not happened yet. What seems to be the holdup if what is the frame, essentially, of what is to be expected is already out there in the Devin Witherspoon contract?
Can I be completely honest? I have no idea. I mean, I've heard Albert Breer say it's guaranteed money. I've heard other people say it's first 2 years money. So there's any number of things. And the business has changed. I can't call up Jack Mills, who used to be Ted's agent, probably still is. Say, Jack, what's the problem out there?
My guy. You
know, it only gets filtered through. So I don't know what the holdup is. And they get all uptight when we ask questions about it. But it's clearly a question of if the Patriots were already offering the most, and I've said this on your show before, they don't want contract to be obsolete. They meaning the Gonzalez camp. So how do you prevent that? you overpay him relative to now, so that by next year, when the next big contract comes down, yours is still relevant. And I think the Patriots reasonably, not that they're right, but they would reasonably say, well, what are we supposed to do that for? You've only played three seasons. You're going into your fourth. You've had some injury issues. And just because Witherspoon got paid first, and this is what I've had more conversations with, it's starting to germinate. Are we positive that Christian Gonzalez is a better player than Devin Witherspoon?
No, not really.
He's a better classic corner, smoother operator. He's what you would draw up. But when you look at Witherspoon and the things that he can do too, I mean, should it be that big of like a $2 or $3 million gap per year? Go ahead, you guys.
I want to ask you this question. When you just posed that question to the group, let me put it this way. And by the way, love the Jack Mills call out right there. He's got to get that Baker Mayfield contract done. He's working on that. But do you think maybe what? Let me ask you this, Tom. Is Gonzo, because I made this argument earlier in the show, is Gonzo, can he maybe make an argument that he's more valuable for his defense than maybe Devin Witherspoon is for his defense in Seattle? Could you make an argument?
Yes, and the reason because he could say, look, Devin might be a really good player, but he's part of a machine out there.
Yeah,
I'm kind of the only game in town out here.
Yep.
God bless him. I love my new teammate, Elijah Ponder, and I think Draymond Jones is terrific and everybody else, but that's a sick defense. This defense will be sick if I'm not playing. So that's where he could make the counter. But, you know, they're different players. And I'm not sitting here after 3 years of watching Christian Gonzalez saying that he's not one of the most graceful, smooth athletes I've ever seen. But I wonder if that's part of the holdup. He's going to make $33 million, Witherspoon is, $59 million over the first 2 years. Guaranteed, or in the first 2 years, not guaranteed, 101 guaranteed. Maybe the holdup, and I'm kind of speculating because it hasn't been done, is that the Patriots are going to go, well, just because he signed, do we really believe you're $2 million better and we're supposed to give you 35? Mm-hmm. And I've always thought 35 would be the number anyway. So we'll see how closely it comes into that.
Tom, why don't they televise these joint practices? They are so much more interesting than these preseason games. They got to make money off this stuff.
Great question. You know, if you're going to take the Super Bowl to Bulgaria to try and make, though, why don't you figure out a way to sell one of the best off-season commodities, which is, you know, do these things at night. I don't care. The fans will show up at night. Yeah. Put it in prime time.
Right.
People would watch that. Oh. Look, turn every place into midnight madness.
The one-on-one stuff, Tom? I mean, the one-on-ones with the receivers and DBs and the offensive linemen, defensive linemen, people would eat that stuff up.
What you need, I think, Ted, and it's a great question too, is to who would be the guinea pig, the willing guinea pig to open up the practices? And it has to be a team that's compelling. You can't just say, all right, well, let's have, and they're not an incompetent team, but they're on the TV in front of me right now. Let's have the Bengals and Titans do it. Well, great. Who cares? Eagles and Patriots would have been a prime opportunity to say, we're coming into your place with our ESPN and NFL Network cameras, and we're going to shoot all these reps, and we're going to do them live. We're not going to be in your face, but we're going to do them live. They do kind of do that somewhat, or used to on NFL Network, but or stream them. Stream them to your local peoples,
right,
to your local fan bases, and make them pay for that. Look, if people are going to drive down to Foxborough to watch, maybe that's part of the reason, too. I am really running off at the mouth here.
But, that's good.
But I think maybe that's another hook to it is, all right, well, we make money when people come in here in, you know, training camp revenue. If we start streaming, these people aren't going to show up. But I don't think that would be the case.
I agree.
No, absolutely not. I want to ask you about this real quick, just because every year we seem to hear Roger Goodell say the same thing about wanting to have a team overseas. The logistics would just seem fairly ridiculous. I don't know how you can do that, but once again, he talked about how hell-bent the league is on getting an actual team overseas. How realistic is that?
If they say they're going to do it, they generally end up doing it. And I just think there's an awful lot of things that occur in the world today that people look at and say, well, nobody really wants that. And it just gets ramrodded down your throat.
Right.
And I think that if you look at who has supported the NFL for nearly 100 years, 75? Are we at 100 yet? Not yet. For more than 75 years, it's the American football fan. Mm-hmm. Yet the American football fan is not dying to have their product taken over to somebody who just looks at it as a novelty. And I don't know. People in Germany might be passionate. I've got plenty of fans who follow me, and I didn't mean to make it sound that way. There are plenty of Patriots fans in Germany who will follow the things that I have written and other people on the beat. They're not fans of mine. They're Patriots fans. But I just think serve your loyal customers first and stop pretending that your loyal customers, of which 93% of your fan base is made up of, is sitting there as excited about it as you people are when you stand in front of a microphone.
Yeah, but that team also gets screwed. Like, if you're a player on Germany or even London, like, every away game is, like, the worst road trip. And it's like, we can solve that by having them do two games at a time. No, but then you're away from your family for, like, this two, like, full weeks where you wait for that. It just seems to me like if you end up getting drafted by, you know, the London Buckaroos, mm-hmm. or whatever they're going to call it, like, you got to be pissed. Like, I don't know how that's fair in any way, shape, or form. It's immediately a bad disadvantage. You know, people talk about, like, a, you know, home field advantage, domes and things like that. How about the worst travel ever every time mm-hmm. you play an away game?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're going to have to play two or three games at home. Say the Patriots go over, then the Jets go over, and then the Dolphins go over to play the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. London Jaguars. And then the London Jaguars come over and they stay for 3 weeks playing, right. You know, the same three teams. And you're back and forth. But you're exactly right. And this is the kind of thing that come 2031, which is thankfully far enough away. Mm-hmm. But when the CBA is up, and the NFL continues to rattle sabers about putting a team overseas, the NFLPA should put its foot down. Good. You want to do that? We are not giving up our 50-50 split of gross revenue.
We are going
to continue to see. Yep. Yeah, we're going to continue to see the salary cap balloon. And so, I don't know. I just hate the business, whether it's the Gonzalez stuff.
I just want to see him play the old pigskin.
I mean, I'm not like a complete, knuckle dragger and don't understand what it's all about, just go hit him in the mouth. Right. I get the business side of stuff, but it just gets...
I'm with you, Tom.
I'm an English major.
I made an argument where, why are our salaries, how does everybody get to see what we make for, for our salaries? If no one else has their salaries out there. And of all the things that I think are fun and interesting and compelling to talk about in this sport, I put the salaries at the bottom. But some people, they would vehemently disagree with me on
that. I think this Gonzalez thing is awesome. I do. Yeah. Because Kraft put his like stuff out there. He put his clankers on the table the minute he said the highest paid of all time, which makes this so great, because now you got to deliver, baby.
Mm-hmm. Right, I agree, but I think in the grander scheme of things, his clankers are on the table, but it's not what we would call. And again, I shouldn't be doing this. Sometimes I do this. It's not Will Fork. It's not Mankins. It's not like Randy Moss. And I'm dismissing the importance because I've seen bigger things happen.
Sure.
So I end up rebuffing the notion that it's a big deal. It's a big deal. But I keep looking at him like, he's not going to hold out. So there's no dire real deadline here. He's going to play. And I don't think he's going to fake. Somebody who's playing all the time that he did during training camp so far, mm-hmm. and I don't think that this is a ruse or a bogus injury at all, he's not going to win the games come say, I'm not playing.
But what if he gets nicked up and something that normally you would play through, but in this case it's like, I got to protect this package. Listen, I haven't gotten paid yet. Maybe I'll take this one off.
No, you're
Couldn't
right.
you see him doing that?
I could, and that's fair. Look, that's what Rob Gronkowski did for a large portion of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Once he broke his arm after they had bolted it back together, and then he broke his arm on the sideline towards the end of that season. I can't remember. It might have been a playoff game. Might have been their first playoff game in 2012, and they ended up not getting to the Super Bowl. Once he broke that arm after it had been bolted back together, he operated completely differently.
Yeah.
Staying in the releasing statements. I'm not taking the field unless I'm 100%. And maybe that should be an approach used by Gonzalez. But the point is, it's a different regime. Might still be the same owner, but Bill did Robert Kraft's dirty work and then some. Mm-hmm. I think Bill really amplified Ted. He showed Robert Kraft how to be stingy with a contract.
That's a big reason he got hired in the first place.
Before he got there.
That was big, the way he viewed the salary cap, as you know, Tom, is a big reason that Kraft was drawn to Bill in the first place.
This guy's pretty good with the dollars and stuff.
It's not a bad one. All right. Well, listen, good having you on. I love that you said that A.J. Brown is a 10. Out of all the years you covered this team, that I got to be honest that, we went from 6 to midnight there all of a sudden.
He's not the only 10. I've seen other 10s, but I haven't seen a 10 in a while. He's a 10.
And he's awesome. He's jacked up 10. Like, he's the most muscular, I think, receiver they have ever had. I mean, I don't think that's a reach to say that. He's got muscles on top of muscles.
Either him and Deion Branch.
Oh, yeah, dude, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Branch was pretty jacked.
No, I'm kidding, Ted.
Okay, you're right. Wrong. He was a tiny little thing.
Sorry.
Hell of a player.
All right, good stuff, Tommy Curran. I love having you on, and we will talk to you again next week, sir.
Thanks, bud.
Great. Sorry to be late. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, man.
All right, we'll see you then. All right, we have to break. We'll be right back.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
All right, back here at Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Dan Ball is in for Jones. We scream over another helicopter. This one arriving. Is that a different helicopter?
It is.
Okay.
There's quite a lot of traffic out here, you guys.
There really is.
This one caused a bit of a ruckus.
This one was loud.
Yeah, we've knocked over a bag of footballs got knocked over as part of this helicopter's
It's like
path.
Apocalypse Now out here.
A little bit. Mego, you ever been in a helicopter?
No, I haven't. That's something that actually makes me a little queasy to think about.
Agreed.
I'm not a very scared flyer, but helicopter is another level.
Oh, different animal.
It's another level.
I also have a weird fear of getting my head cut off by the propeller.
I don't think that's weird. I think that's what most people think of when they see a propeller.
Because you do see, like, in movies when people approach helicopters, even if the people are, like, 5 feet tall, they, like, duck down like they're going to actually get, like,
see, I always assumed that was because of the wind force that was coming off of the chopper,
maybe.
That they're kind of leaning down against the wind.
And not just fear of getting their head lopped off. You might be right. You might be right. All right, you were down there on the field watching day two of Pat's Eagles joint practice. What jumped out to you today, Mego?
Well, I'll start with the positive. I think that this was maybe the best day of training camp that we've seen from Romeo Doubs. I thought that he was far and away the standout player on offense. He had a beautiful touchdown to finish the day. I think it was against Reek Woolen.
Yeah, probably.
Reek Woolen is everywhere because Reek Woolen also picked off.
As I say, he giveth and he taketh away.
Yeah, Drake May. His one real giveaway targeting A.J. Brown earlier in training camp. I'm impressed because I thought that Romeo Doubs started off camp in a pretty quiet way. And you go, all right, this guy had 700 receiving yards last year. Came from a spread it around offense with Green Bay. Who is he going to be here? He's been excellent over the last week. And particularly just in these joint practices yesterday, he had one pass that skipped off his fingertips and was kind of a dangerous mistake. That'll happen. But I thought he was great today.
Could he be a 1,000-yard guy, too? Because A.J. Brown's time in Philly, he and Devontae Smith, I think 3 out of the 4 years, both had 1,000 yards. So it's not, like, unprecedented. His career high was last year, like 720-something. Could you think he could be up to that number?
I feel that that would be a lot.
Too much. Okay.
To share around. I mean, how many yards at that? If you're giving him 1,000 yards, mm-hmm. and we all assume that A.J. Brown is going to go over 1,000, maybe upwards towards 1,200-plus. If you talk to Scheim, he probably thinks like 1,500 at this point from watching camp highlights.
Number
like,
keeps growing every day.
How much are you having May throw the ball game to game?
Well, I mean, May can throw for 4,000 yards, and it's still not like a wild number, right? I mean, 17-game season, those two guys get half the yards, and then you spread out the other 2,000 everywhere else.
And the rest of the room is miserable.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's another part of it where, you know, it's funny. Every day it seems like either Kyle Williams has a nice play or Kayshon Booty or Matt Collins. Like, everybody's performing, but they just all can't be on the field at the same time.
Yeah, one ball. They all got to share it. I will say the other takeaway that I had from today was, well, two. One, Caleb Lomu got a little bit more work because Morgan Moses took some of the day off, as he tends to do with his age. I thought the offense struggled significantly more when Lomu was in there. He had a tough time on that right side. You saw the right side of the pocket break down a couple times with Lomu out there. And then I would also say that I think as we continue to see this Christian Gonzalez situation, it really brings into light, now that you're watching the Eagles-Patriots joint practice, how thin they are defensively. I mean, you're looking at guys who are stepping into these roles, and it feels like the Eagles are down a couple players, too, in these joint practices. But for us, watching the team throughout this entire training camp, you just go, man, are they going to make some kind of move, maybe with Kayshon Booty, to bring in some reinforcements? Because even just not improving on the talent that you have on the defense, but just trying to bring in some depth there.
Is it fair to say today was the biggest and most obvious day in terms of the absence of Gonzalez? Like, this is the biggest that hole looked on the defense so far.
I don't think it's any one particular just Gonzalez. I mean, you had Marcus Jones, who in team competitive drills had two interceptions. He picked off Jalen Hurts twice. So it's not like there aren't playmakers that are out there. I continue to say, compared to how I felt earlier in training camp, that Kevin Byard has looked good. And I more think it's just like, okay, we've been talking about the edge continuously and the questions that you have there. I still think you have questions with linebackers. We have no idea what's going on with Harold Landry whatsoever. And then with cornerbacks, you're looking at, when Christian Gonzalez is down, hopefully you have Davis out there. But Davis is somebody who missed at least 2 weeks of camp as well. So I think that at all levels of the defense, you have to be looking at your roster and saying, we've really got a surplus of talent on the other side of the ball in some spots. We love those guys, and they've all been making plays during camp, but we really need to address this other side.
It's still a day where Kayshon Booty is on the team. Is it just going to get to the point where all of a sudden week one rolls around and he's here, or do you still is a trade still in the mix?
I think Mike Vrabel has left the door, certainly, for that to be possible. And one thing that I noticed yesterday that I did think was interesting was you saw a little bit of A.J. Brown with Kayshon Booty on the field at the same time. I don't know if you guys picked up on that when they were running A.J. Brown in the slot. And I thought, well, maybe they're trying to find different configurations among all these receivers so that Kayshon has a role. I just don't think if you're Kayshon and you're going into a contract year that you're going to like the role of being the fourth or fifth guy getting targets, let alone seven receivers on the roster. And again, going back to some of the holes in your depth, I don't think that that is the smartest way to configure the roster.
Well, I like Kayshon Booty, but
I do too.
I wonder where could he go right now with such little camp, right? Like show up right before the season and be like the number two option on a team. Like I think that's tough. Even if he might be better, like in a vacuum, but like, does that team have a quarterback like Drake May? Do they have an offensive coordinator like McDaniels? Do they have a team like the Patriots? Like, I think it's easier said than done, like, for him to think, hey, I'm going to get a lot more opportunities somewhere else. Because we were talking about, like, the Eagles, for example. The Eagles don't have amazing wide receivers, but if you throw him into camp super late, and then, like, Devontae Smith and Mekhi Lemon come back, it's like, all right, you're pushed down that depth chart.
He's still in a better place, I would guess, with that situation than here, though, because you're talking about the difference between being the third wideout and the fourth. And you know, when you're getting guys on the field,
as somebody
and you're
who
trying
is a fifth wide receiver, I absolutely know what that is.
So
like.
You know, there's a big difference between yeah. how much you're getting on the field and what you can do for your stats and what that means for the contract that he's trying to earn. Now you can say, okay, well, what about the winning and getting back to the Super Bowl? But that's life-changing money for Kayshon Booty compared to where he is now.
On the Drake May conversation is, again, it's impossible to think of what an improvement this year could look like. How do you think he's looked during camp specific to red zone performance and getting the ball out quickly?
Like I said before, I don't think it's all on him in terms of some of the timing being a little janky in the red zone that we saw today. You see different things break down and you go, it's not just a bad play by Drake May. But that seems to be the area that he is most focused on improving. Yeah. If you listen to the sound that he just gave talking to us in the media, what I'm really curious about, guys, is how much are we going to see him in the preseason? Like, are we going to see any of these guys more than
he hasn't
a couple
said, right?
drives?
Because I feel like Vrabel said pretty early on that, like, you won't see him against the Colts. He hasn't confirmed anything right
now.
No,
we haven't. We didn't talk to him today. I asked Drake if he has any say in preseason and does he want to be out there? Like, yeah. What does he get from it? And he's like, yeah, the game clock and the atmosphere. And I'm like, all right. So,
yeah, like, and he gave you like, oh, I'm here, and if they put me out there, I'll play and kind of thing. I'm like, that's not what we wanted.
Selfishly, for someone who goes to the preseason games for work, I'm like, God, can we get some of these starters out here? Of course, you have to balance the health of it. But last week's preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts was the preseason season, the most seasoned.
Yeah,
most preseason game.
That was tough. And it was a tie at the end. You're like, what the hell? Like, we stick around at the end and it's a tie. You mentioned Lomu. What about the other rookies, Gabe Akis and Eli Raritan? Anything jump out good or bad about those guys?
Yeah, I was watching Gabe Akis quite a bit yesterday, at least because they brought the big boys from Philly down close to where us in the media were. And I was like, okay, you know, this is the premier offensive line for the most part in the league. So let's see how this pass rush that we're very concerned about is going to do against them. I thought Akis did a pretty good job holding his own in 1v1s. Now, sometimes he was going up against reserves in that, so it's not necessarily going up against the cream of the crop, but you go against who you line up against. And I thought he looked really good in that. I was watching him a little bit. He's still running with the twos in the team portions. Not a whole lot jumped out at me from him in that, but I would say that yesterday it's like you're taking these little steps with him. I don't know if he's going to be somebody who makes a big impact right away. And I think Vrabel is just all over his case every day.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's any real kind of fun answers to this, but any roster battles that you're watching, any spots on the depth chart that you're kind of watching to see how they might round out?
Well, the obvious one is everybody's watching wide receiver.
Right.
I would say the other one that is going to be interesting once we get into the season, because you won't see it in the preseason as much, is running back.
Yeah.
You saw Ramondre Stevenson have a fumble today, brought back some bad feelings.
Oh, no.
Some bad feelings about
started
ball
early.
Security
Great.
From Ramondre Stevenson, but you also had him break away with a beautiful inside run. And you're like, okay, this is the Ramondre Stevenson experience. With Trevion Henderson, he, especially towards the second half of the regular season, was explosive and put up these huge stats. But, you know, who's he going to be in terms of now being a sophomore in pass protection? That was the big question with him. And that's just the kind of stuff that we can't really see a ton of in training camp, but it still looks like they're lending that hand a little bit more towards Ramondre Stevenson. Those guys will probably share a bulk there, though.
All right, Mego, thanks for coming up here and joining us. You're in tomorrow for Jones, correct? Full four-hour program.
Really weird
studio.
Show.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. Friday's weird.
We get really weird?
Oh, yeah. Come up with some weird ideas, and we will use all of those ideas.
Oh, good. I got to go because my ride is leaving. I don't know if you can hear that over the broadcast.
You better hustle.
But, oh, yep. They got to throw me a rope as they fly that helicopter right
over
here.
Oh, that's cool. The old ladder?
Yeah.
The rope ladder?
No, just a rope.
Oh, wow. That's
and
impressive.
I'll just shimmy up that.
I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and then I'll stick my leg out and I'll wave to everyone.
That's I'd watch that cool. Mission Impossible. I'd watch
that. Yeah, that's not bad. All right, Mego, we will talk to you tomorrow. Thank you for today.
Hey, Mego.
That was Colin Cowherd. He's ranking the coach-quarterback duos in the NFL. And he has Vrabel and May at 6. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And they are behind Darnold and McDonald. They are behind Herbert and Harbaugh.
Here's the Stafford, McVay, Mahomes, Reed, Herbert, Harbaugh, Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, Sam Darnold, Mike McDonald, and then Drake May and Mike Vrabel.
So that is wild. I honestly usually understand it. Like before, I got the hate for Brady and Belichick because they just won so much and people were sick of them. And people like, you know, Nick Wright was Chiefs fans, or people nationally like Max Kellerman from New York hated that Boston kept winning and they just wanted to find any reason they were going to fall off a cliff. What's hateable about Drake May? Like, he's like, has there ever been more of an aw shucks celebrity? I mean,
no, I think that that nationally people just remember the Super Bowl and move on from that, and the off field dumb story that happened. And that's why we're seeing this.
From Vrabel,
where we are seeing them constantly when it comes to the national
conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, Courtney, I look at, like, so if you want to go back to the Super Bowl, that's totally fine. They were awful. Mm-hmm. Drake was not good. Bad.
Well, that's why you get Sam Darnold and Mike McDonald in front of them.
So explain to me Herbert. I think the Patriots beat them in the playoffs.
Right.
Beat the crap out of them. Right.
Herbert was not good.
That's the only one.
So why does the playoff matter for the Patriots quarterback, but it doesn't matter for the quarterback of the Chargers?
Yeah, that go both ways.
Yeah, that's the only one I don't understand. The only thing that I could potentially think about, unless they feel like, and when I say they, Cowherd feels like that Harbaugh's a better coach than Vrabel.
But he's not.
But
Vrabel's
saying,
first year with the Patriots, he got them to the Super Bowl, and it was largely, again, Drake May did not play great in the playoffs. I think we've all accepted that. We all acknowledge that, which means the coach was really, really good to get them from the first playoff game to a Super Bowl.
And not to mention that defense that we credit Vrabel, defensive coach, right? They kept them in that Super Bowl despite the offense being awful. I mean, that game should have been 35-3. Like, that first half, it was turnover, forcing field goals.
Right.
Like, the defense bent but didn't break at all.
With a guy who had never called off or defensive plays in the NFL and Zach Kaur taking over at the beginning of the season, like, Vrabel was a large part of the game planning week in and week out for that.
Right, but I wonder this, and I'm only, because I know how we are here locally. We, you know, have more love for our teams, our players, our coaches. I wonder if the conversation nationally, and this is why, you know, if this is a list by Cowherd, if he would have nationally go, okay, and I don't know if they've done this, and this would be interesting. I don't know if they have done, like, you know, the best coaches in the NFL for 2026. I don't know if we could find that anywhere, even for 2025. I wonder if nationally people, and when I say people, not fans, but people who talk football, would think that Harbaugh is a better coach than Vrabel because he took a team to a Super Bowl. He then went to college, won a national championship, came back, has been coaching 2 years and taken his team to the playoffs. I wonder nationally where they would rank Vrabel when it comes to best coaches in the NFL.
But I think you have to remember what the national conversation was when the Patriots were winning last season. And that was that they're only winning because it was an easy schedule.
Right.
They're fraudulent.
Right, I get that.
And so then you go to the Super Bowl and you put out what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Of course the national media is going to hold them accountable now because that's the last taste they've left in their mouth.
Right, but I think to maybe Curtis's point, it's like, okay, we all can agree Stafford, McVay, Mahomes, Reed. We all can agree on that one. You know, maybe you can say, all right, I understand why he went Sam Darnold, Mike McDonald. The question would be Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson, Justin Herbert, Jim Harbaugh. So if we're talking about Herbert and Harbaugh, is it because they feel like Harbaugh's a better coach than Vrabel, and maybe people feel like, oh, Drake May will be a better quarterback, but Herbert has shown like, okay, he's a good quarterback. Is that why? I would say, explain to me the Bank Johnson, Caleb Williams one. Because you could probably sway me on the Harbaugh Herbert one. Even though I wouldn't agree with it, you could probably find enough people that would.
Can we stick with Harbaugh first? And then go ahead. We'll go. So for me, I think the Chargers are at least as talented of a roster as the Patriots, if not more talented. And I watched that game last year.
Uh-huh.
And the Patriots outplayed them the entirety of that game.
Right.
So if the talent is similar, if not on the side of the Chargers, and the Patriots outplay you in every facet without a fluke and win the game handily, how is the coach better on the other team?
That's a great point.
Wiggy was asking for lists. One random list I found, CBS Sports, has Jim Harbaugh, or Ben Johnson ranked 6, Jim Harbaugh ranked 7, and Mike Vrabel ranked 8 as best coaches in the NFL.
All right. So there you go. So I think the Harbaugh situation is a little bit of his history and what he did at San Francisco. Forget about college. I'll take that off the map. What he did at San Francisco, and now his first 2 years in the NFL, he's taken the Chargers to back-to-back playoffs.
Can't you talk history with Vrabel, though? Like what he was able to do with the Titans off the bat?
But he never got to a Super Bowl with the Titans.
He got to an AFC title game with Ryan Tannehill.
No, that's true. But he got to a Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick.
Right. Take a knee. I would say the look at the Titans without Vrabel, though.
Right.
Like
awful.
It's it's like Belichick without Brady bad. And so you look and see where this team is.
Right.
And where it was. We forget Gerard Mayo, 4-13. They had consecutive 4-13 seasons. Mike Vrabel comes in and they go 14-3. That is a historic turnaround. Unprecedented that a team won 8 games in its 2 preceding years and won 16 including the playoffs, the next year. They more than doubled their win total the 2 prior years. It's never been done in NFL history.
See, I could give you, like, you could convince me. I wouldn't agree, but you could convince me that Herbert and Harbaugh could be third. But I would have Drake May and Mike Vrabel fifth, because I would then slide up Sam Darnold and Mike McDonald, just because they won last year, I would slide them up to fourth. I just don't, because the reason you could convince me is you might not like Justin Herbert, right? But the thing that he's been consistently through the regular season is one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that Drake May in his kind of really first year as a true starter and with a real head coach and a real coordinator, he's looked good. I think a lot of the knock from him nationally is, all right, he's only done it 1 year. Let's see what he looks like this year.
But like then, I don't understand why he has Caleb Williams.
That's
so high,
why.
Right?
That's
like,
why I said to you, I would have May and Vrabel fifth, and I would have Drake May and Vrabel ahead of Caleb Williams. I would slide Donald and McDonald up one. Because you could, like I said, if you want to argue that Harbaugh has done it before, he's gotten to a Super Bowl, that people feel like he's a better coach, okay, I'm not saying I would agree with that, but I could see where you'd be coming from. And if you want to argue that, you know, Justin Herbert has proven that he could be a good quarterback in this league for a long time, granted he hasn't won a playoff game, okay, you could make that argument because Drake May has only done it 1 year. Same with Caleb Williams. But I would say that Mike Vrabel is a better head coach than Ben Johnson.
I agree. And I would, how many quarterbacks, if there was a draft today entering this season, would go before Drake May?
Maybe 2.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because you're starting a franchise? Maybe 2.
All right.
So Josh Allen.
Let's do this next.
All right.
Let's get into this.
Geez.
We're gonna draft the quarterbacks. Mel Kiper is going to come in here, and Todd McShay is joining us in the studio.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
It is 93.7 WEEI, Rich Certainleave, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Stiz, Jackson, is this the new down?
What yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm the so new excited. What? Down.
The new down.
It's Phil Anselmo of Pantera, Corrosion of Conformity, Jimmy Bauer from EHG, yeah, we will call them.
EHG, we'll call them.
And one of the dudes from Crowbar, I believe, also.
Yes. Yep. Kirk from Crowbar, and Pepper from Corrosion and Conformity.
They're playing,
awesome
with,
band.
Playing with Helmet next week, who's one of my all-time favorite bands. Ooh. But, first of all, we were just talking about Roman Anthony, and that, I mean, it's there's really nothing better than seeing him in his first game jack that home run. And you said that somebody on text was at the game?
Oh, yeah. So you can text the show, same numbers you call. I was at the Sea Dogs game last night. The ball was demolished. It left the stadium. People, it's amazing how instant the excitement comes back. This guy's been out since May the 4th. 3.5 months. He's been the subject of ridicule and scorn. One home run at Hadlock Field, and people are already talking him up like he's Judge.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah. You're right, right. All of a sudden, you know, Judge is coming back.
Speaking of Judge, we're out of the dry swing era. Now for the Yankees. Aaron Judge, according to Aaron Boone, is doing, quote, swing-related stuff in the pool, end quote.
Swing-related stuff. I love that. Very technical. Somebody on Texas, Rich is a good host. I'm glad he's here. But the more he does that awful conspiracy theory voice, the more I think that one is his real personality.
It could be.
Let's quickly go to Paul on line one as we just completely get sidetracked. Paul, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How's everybody doing?
Hey, good.
Ken, tell me the truth. Are you like 30 seconds away with the Dice Clay jokes? Are you like 30 seconds away from a stroke? Somebody keep an eye on him. Make sure the one side of his face doesn't start to droop. All I can do is picture it like beads of sweat like gathering on his forehead, pulling out what hair he has left.
Dice is not an FCC approved artist. Let's put it that way. He's a little, you know, it's probably best for the dark web.
A little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet eating her curds and whey. Along came a spider, sat down beside her and said, "Hey, what's in the bowl, chick?" Of course, he didn't say chick. I just thought that is FCC
right.
Cleared. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Patriots. They are having joint practices right now with the Eagles. According to some of the writers down there, it was the loudest that the crowd has been in years. And why not?
I mean, with Eagles fans there, according to Jones and Keefe, who were describing the action live. So I guess Philly people came up for the practice, which is cool.
That's a big deal. I mean, think about it. It's, you know, I don't want to say it's as big as like someone from Boston going and watching the Sixers practice or something like that. But I mean, it's AJ Brown, and there was definitely some drama there. I mean, wasn't Jalen Hurts the only one that wasn't invited from that team to AJ Brown's wedding? The whole thing? Like, he essentially just got like left off the list. Jalen Hurts, by the way, gets way too much crap as a player. I know that there's that weird stuff like that, but Jalen Hurts is a very, very good quarterback.
I agree, but all my friends always crapping on AJ on Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I mean,
Drake's going to double his production this year.
I mean, listen, we shall
maybe
see.
Maybe triple.
We shall see 300
catches for AJ Brown this year.
The way practice is looking, man, the Drake to AJ Brown thing is real, and we knew it was going to be, but it's been fun to watch. All right, 617-779-7937. I want to play this clip right here, Stiz. This is you've got AJ Brown and all this Eagles media. And there's a lot of unanswered questions when he left. As I said, this does feel a little bit like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and going to another place. But this one was, I think, a little more animosity involved. Some of the passive-aggressive stuff that A.J. Brown put on social media. Let's take a listen. This is this is A.J. Brown at his media availability right after the practice today.
Talk to Jalen.
No.
How did you leave things with him?
Philly, man, y'all are tough, man. Man, it's love. But listen, honestly, guys, none of that stuff even matters. Yeah, I think you all should want to report something positive. You know, asking the question is going to turn negative. So let's not get into that. And let's keep everything positive. It's love my way, and just move forward. That's all.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'll say this. So AJ Brown has been so far A+, right? There's no problems.
Yep.
Maybe it is just a particular issue with him and this other player, but I do wonder if down the road, is this part of his DNA where he's going to want the football? What really caused the rift here, and could that ever be a problem here?
What's the best indicator of future behavior?
Yeah,
past behavior.
But that's not always fair. Like in this case, maybe he just hates Hurts. There's personal. But if it was football reasons, he wasn't getting the ball enough. That's a different story.
You know, with wide receivers, it really is a delicate balance between wanting a guy who is a good soldier and wanting a guy who's cocky as hell and wants the ball all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think A.J. Brown leans a little bit more towards the latter. Like, you know, I want the ball at all times. And obviously, when you have a coach like Mike Vrabel, you know, someone that A.J. Brown says he respects, and it's very tough not to. I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, he's a player's coach. Despite all the stuff that people are saying could ruin his reputation amongst the players that happened with Dan Orsini, which I don't believe. But I think that he's just got a little bit of that edge in him. And the edge can backfire if things aren't going well, absolutely.
Well, that's what I mean, and especially because Vrabel's his guy.
Yeah.
And there's a perceived Vrabel-McDaniels awkwardness that maybe is gone because they went to the Super Bowl together. But at least last year it was like, oh, why does he keep bringing up Ashton Grant? Why does he keep bringing up Todd Downing, the receivers coach? So let's say AJ's not getting the ball enough. Does AJ go to Vrabel and complain about McDaniels? You know, that sort of thing. It's something just to keep in the back of your mind. I'm as excited as everybody. You watch some of these clips that Terp put up and people who were there.
Yeah.
It's exciting, you know? It's just to see the possibilities of it. And then you see the Eagles media swarm in, and it's like, man, the sharks are in the water.
Well, let's hear some more of this. Just this. You've got a couple more clips of the Eagles media trying to get under his skin. Let's take a listen.
I love you, and I'm not looking in the past. It's a game. That game, no, I didn't play my best, but I'm not going backwards, you know. It doesn't exist. And that's the last question I'm going to answer about the past. So.
Okay.
Oh, shut it off.
I know. Shut it off. Listen, I understand where he's coming from. He's like, dude, all right, I don't play for them anymore, but I don't like him. I wish he was more like Jaylen Brown. The one thing you could say about Jaylen Brown is Jaylen Brown's answering questions and he's talking. And I know it may not be the best for him, but it's great for us. Like, I mean, there was that clip that when he was on Kimmel the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, are you pissed off or do you think it was dumb that the Celtics let you go? And he goes, man, we're going to see, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to find out. I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I said, you know, because we played that over the weekend as well. Somehow I've come to like Jaylen Brown more now that he's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really understand my own emotions of it. And I get why some Celtics fans would be pissed because he took a shot at, you know, the favorite season of my career. He kept going back to that, and it definitely was odd.
Yeah.
You know, the behavior there at the end. But I do think he's been fun in the way he's handled it. I think he's been pretty classy since he's left. I'm looking forward to the shoe event in the Common later this month.
Yeah, he's coming back. It's like with bands and everything. It's going to be enormous. It'll be enormous down there. That's cool that he's doing that, too. I like the fact that he's saying goodbye to the fans here. You know, I've got no problem with that whatsoever. I'm telling you, I think the Celtics team is going to be better than we're all dreading. I know that this, and it's not because of Paul George. As I've told you this many times before, when I imagine this team next season, I don't even think about Paul George being a part of it.
Even Paul George was finally on the record. The Celtics put out some stuff with him, and he seems excited. And even that, I'm watching him like, all right, maybe he's got a few games in him. You know,
You're right. One or two times that the sun might shine on a dog's ass. Yeah. They go out there, and all of a sudden, he's fantastic, like he was in the playoffs. But I don't even think about him. I think about Mitchell Robinson, who apparently is a big redneck. I didn't realize this. The dude's like totally like has like a gigantic truck. Loves like
yeah, but
like
the trucks country. Are like pimped out though, aren't they? They're not like
but it's like but it pimped out in a monster truck type way.
Oh, really?
Like he loves country music. There's a video of him on the 4th of July in these big overalls, just like launching stuff with a cowboy hat. Yeah, like he's kind of a big redneck, which I think is awesome. But you've got some size on the team. And you've got Mike Conley, who's his veteran, and I just think it's going to be a cleaner type of offense. I for some reason, I almost think that when you make it more basic, and I think Pritchard will get better, he will not become Jalen Brunson, so stop with that. But he is going to get better, which is a great thing because Peyton Pritchard's already very, very good.
Well, just sitting there at Fenway last night and you're watching like what the start of a run here, which could lead to a playoff series, and you know we're hoping a long one.
Yeah.
And then the Celtics are still interesting, obviously. You got A.J. Brown coming in.
Yeah.
This has been a tough decade for the most part, other than the one Celtics title. But you're starting to feel like turn a corner here. Don't you like feel that? We're getting close to the fall. Pats just made a Super Bowl. They're going to be good again. Red Sox are going to make the playoffs again. Celtics are going to be a playoff team. I don't know if you can consider them a favorite.
I mean, the only team that I can honestly say there's probably no way they're winning a championship next year or like upcoming would be the Bruins. And that's just because of where they are.
But even them, they made a postseason appearance. They hung in there with Buffalo for a little bit. Like, the NHL's weird. You just get in. We've had 8 seeds go to the Cup Finals.
So sure.
It's a long shot. You're right.
And if Swayman gets hot, obviously, yeah, you know.
Some of the young guys come along.
But I'm just saying the only one that right now, I don't think I could make a very good argument for the Bruins.
Right.
I think I could make a pretty good argument. I mean, you could definitely make an argument for the Red Sox. And, you know, the Patriots, I do think that they're being underrated this season. I think they're going to be very good.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, they went to the Super Bowl last year, so you can make an argument for them. Then, you know, when it comes to the Celtics, I don't know what the Sixers are going to be. I don't like that they got LeBron because there's an adult in the room now. When he was gone, I like that it could have been chaos and imploded.
Because you wanted LeBron here, which is a mind-blowing.
But no. I'm complimenting LeBron being with the Sixers. I hate doing it because I hate that guy. But he's the adult in the room, and he's going to calm things down. Now, the one thing that might hijack it, if he's way too interested in this stupid documentary that he's doing and the outside of basketball stuff, that would be great. And then it will all implode. That will be fantastic if that happens. Yeah, I think that the Celtics have a good enough team to have a puncher's chance to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
And they could be interesting. You're right. Like 850 texter. Mitchell Robinson comes from the Redneck Riviera of Pensacola. Nothing Florida about it other than the beach. It's Lower Alabama.
Yeah. He goes to L.A., Lower Alabama.
But if he's like a fun guy to follow, that's great.
You know,
they're a 4 seed and they're kind of fun.
Yep.
Cool. Like we can take one sort of gap year.
Sure.
And then get Steph Curry in at the deadline.
That's right. Then at the deadline, Steph Curry changes everything. All right. 617-779-7937. We'll be right back with your calls.
Agent.
How did you leave things with him?
Philly, man. Y'all are tough, man. Man, it's love. But listen. I honestly, guys, none of that stuff even matters. Yeah, I think you all should want to report something positive. You know, you know, asking the question is going to turn negative. So let's not get into that. And let's keep everything positive. It's love my way. And just move forward. That's all.
Hour number two, Jones and Keefe, WEEI live for Patriots training camp. It is joint practices between the Pats and the Philadelphia Eagles. Dan Ball sitting in for Jones today. And that was A.J. Brown yesterday, when he spoke to the media and talking of asking about Jalen Hurts. They have not spoken. It is a Tatum Brown situation going on with Hurts
tough.
AJ Brown.
Who could have seen it coming?
Yeah,
guy reads a book on the sideline, and couldn't have seen that one coming.
He just came up with another catch, by the way, as they are doing 11-on-11s from the red zone, but like deep red zone. They're on like the 18-yard line or so, and AJ Brown just caught another pass. So it seems like the success from yesterday is kind of carried over for the Patriots in their offense, but a lot more practice left to go, and so we'll keep you up to date on all of that stuff. AJ Brown expectations for this season. So I view it as on a scale of Chad Ochocinco to Randy Moss. Like over the last 20 years as a Patriots fan, I was so jacked up when they got Chad Ochocinco.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he like turned into like the character that he was and like changing his name and everything, I think people skip over how nasty Chad Johnson was.
Oh, awesome.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Cincinnati. And for like he and Bill had a really good relationship. And so when he came here, I'm like, he's going to be the man. He was not. He somehow stayed on the team all year. He had 15 catches for 276 yards and one touchdown.
Whew, man.
That was not cutting it, but
no.
That was that one. The scale, though, goes from Ochocinco to Randy Moss, who sets a single-season record for receiving touchdowns his first year in New England playing with Tom Brady. So that's the scale. You have a lot of guys in between. You have some a little bit closer to Randy Moss as than Ocho, right? Like a Brandon Cooks, for example. He had a decent enough season. Where do you put AJ Brown on that list? What kind of numbers are you expecting this season from him?
Well, I don't have him breaking any records. I don't.
Okay, all right.
Though I mean, and it's hard not to get fired up watching everything that we've seen so far, because at least, you know, when you're playing against your own teammates and then against a defense that should know kind of your tips and tricks and how to defend you.
Good point. Yep.
I would have thought there would be a step back, but it even, you know, Mitchell on down the depth chart can't really catch up with him. I mean, Stephon Diggs last year, 1,013 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, that's good.
It's and I think it was better. I don't know. I didn't have him at 1,000 yards last year.
No, I don't think so. I was hopeful. I was like, I forget whatever the number was. I like the over. The number might have been like 800 or 50. And I was like, give me the over. Like I did think he was going to be good because I didn't know how many games he was going to play.
Yeah.
And then when he's ready week one, I'm like, he is the number one target. And not to belittle 1,000 yards, but
okay,
with 17 games, what is that?
It's true.
58 yards a game or something like that?
We're about 5 years behind the curve, at least.
It's not that crazy a number.
Right, right.
You basically, like, if A.J. Brown stays healthy, it'd be really disappointing in my mind if he's not at 1,000 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. But the funny thing is, because him and, you know, DeVonta Smith both had such productive relationships with Jalen Hurts outside of the personality side of things, He wasn't that far over 1,000 yards. So
first 2 years he was.
Right, right.
With Philly, I mean. AJ Brown in Philly, first 2 years smashed it. Last 2 years where they've had different coordinators, and they also had the 2,000 yard season from Saquon Barkley and the tush push.
Right.
So like between all of that, like they started throwing it less. So that's why I think even if he doesn't hit those first 2 year numbers with Philly, maybe somewhere in between. Like, I fully expect a 1,200-yard season.
I like that.
And, like, eight touchdowns.
Yes, that was kind of the thing I was pulling away, is that those four touchdowns need to be at least doubled, if not hitting double digits. Like, I think he can be a 10-touchdown guy.
Yep.
And even if it's 1,100 yards with how much May likes to spray the ball around and how many options he has, I feel like 11,000, that'd be
put
a
down
season. MVP right today. 1,110 touchdowns, I feel like that's everything you could ask for. Because that implies, all right, we figured out some of the red zone stuff with this offense.
Definitely. So the last 4 years in Philly, A.J. Brown started with 11 touchdowns.
Okay.
And then each of the last three seasons had seven.
Okay.
Now, again, though, Philly very differently. When Philly gets into the red zone, they're not looking to pass it.
Right.
You know, they're just going to
run, shove.
Shove Jalen Hurts into the end zone. Between Hurts and, I mean, there's just so many touchdowns between Hurts and Saquon Barkley over the last couple of years. So,
right.
Yeah, no, I do expect that number to be pretty high. And maybe not Moss, right? Not the Moss level, which his first year with New England, 98 catches, 1,493 for yards, and an NFL record 23 receiving touchdowns.
God.
So, yeah, that's high.
How lucky we were.
But then there was that stretch where the Patriots didn't even have a 1,000-yard wide receiver. Like,
right.
Like, Steph Diggs broke a streak there for a long time where they weren't having guys put up those kind of numbers. Brandon Cooks, when he was here, and I think he was viewed as a bit of a disappointment, 65 catches, 1,082 yards, but he did have 7 touchdowns for the 2017 Patriots. He had more receiving yards the year before with New Orleans and more the next year with the Rams. An odd career for Brandon Cooks.
But very much so, yeah.
No, I think this could be short of like Welker Moss. I am expecting that. Like, I think it's going to be better than Cooks. I think it's going to be better than Steph Diggs. I think it's going to be better than any other receiver you could think of that
right.
has come over in the last 20-plus years. Romeo Doubs is kind of an interesting one to me, too. Like, he was sort of one of a handful of receivers in Green Bay. The Patriots also obviously prioritized him because they went out and signed him in free agency and gave him decent money.
And he's rotating in very well, it seems. Like between him, Pop, and A.J. Brown is that kind of that first line of offense coming out. It seems like he's finding a really nice spot as kind of that Y opposite A.J. Brown right now.
So career high for him last year, 724 yards. You're like more or less for Doubs this year.
More or less for Doubs. I think it's more, but I think it's close. I feel like he's going to be pushing around 800 yards, but I think that that's... And I could also see... I could see his touchdown number being lower. Like, if you end up shorting your football reference number, it'll go A.J. Brown, Hunter Henry, maybe even, you know, Travion Henderson in the pass game, and then Doubs a little bit further down the list. I could see him being a big guy, you know, chunk gain kind of plays in between the 20s this year, more so than red zone target.
Looks like a Mac Hollins touchdown on that latest throw from Drake May. And it's funny, he's a great example of... Just when you're like, I haven't really heard anything from Mac Hollins' touchdown.
Right.
Like yesterday was the same thing. Like, it hasn't really happened. And then, like, what are the deep passes during 11-on-11s in the middle of the field to Mac Hollins? You're like, okay.
He's just kind of, I feel like, of the seven, maybe him and Efton Chisholm, the two guys that apparently are best buddies now, which I don't know if I would have called.
Yeah. Why not?
We haven't really talked about him all that much because I think there's no question to me that he's on the roster, and I think his role is just kind of getting where I fit in. We need a couple yards. May seem to have a lot of trust in him, especially early downs. Mm-hmm. He's huge, so he can kind of play those tight end adjacent reps, and I think he kind of just feels like an offensive Swiss Army knife. Couple hundred yards, but just fits in where they need an extra body on certain kind of gadget plays.
All right, I asked you before, Ramondre Stevenson versus Travion Henderson, which guy would you give more of the snaps to?
I'm a Travion guy.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
God.
I know. And both are, it's a good problem to have because I think one and two, they both bring different skill sets, but are both really exciting in their own right. But it was one of the more surprising stats last year to me that Henderson ended up with 900 yards on the ground.
Yeah, good point. Didn't feel like it, did it?
No. Yeah. He worked his way into being a part of the pass game, and I think that's going to continue. I just think there's so many different ways that Josh McDaniels can deploy him, and I think it took him part of the year to figure out, here's the skill set, here's where he works into my scheme, but now that they've had a full season together, I really think there's some dynamic talent there. But you need a couple yards, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. That's where I go to Ramondre and say, lead us to the promised land.
I mean, with Ramondre, there's obviously the fumble concern. It's like, if he does that again, you feel terrible, and then he might have to sit. But I thought the way he finished last season, the way he performed in the playoffs even last year, where the offense was by no means great.
100%.
But Ramondre was maybe their best offensive player. Another touchdown to A.J. Brown.
Yep.
Fans are into this. Oh, they're feeling that. I mean, the answer probably will be it's going to be a bit of a split anyway.
Yeah.
Right? It's like both guys, and then you're going to take their numbers at the end of the season, and it's going to be similar to like what Christian McCaffrey does. Right. Like, but I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you're still getting that kind of production from a running back because what was Ramondre ran for 600 yards last year.
Yeah.
He said 900 yards for Henderson.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. That's pretty great.
It's a darn good running back one when you put all that together. And I do think that Travion Henderson's presence makes Ramondre Stevenson better. Like, if you, and we've seen in past years, if you try to line him up as a three down back and you say, we need you to pick up a thousand plus yards and be a force in the red zone, I don't think he has that top end talent. But if he's if it's a 1A, 1B, we need you guys to do different things kind of setup, which I think it's going to be, I think both of their presences make each other better and keep them fresh for further down the line.
So I kind of like both groups. I do like the receiver group. I think the running back group with those two guys kind of splitting carries, they both can catch passes out of the backfield. I think that's pretty promising. Is the O-line on offense for you the biggest question mark?
Has to be.
Yeah.
By far, I'm extremely impressed with how the Patriots reworked the wide receiver room. I like the tandem. I think, you know, who ends up winning that third running back spot with Terrell Jennings going down is it's a Vrabel interesting but not important necessarily.
Yeah, because all of a sudden that guy will have like a big carry or something.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And as long, you know, barring any injuries, knock on wood, hopefully that person won't be overly important, but you have two starting caliber guys. It's the O-line, and it's center and to the left. Like, I'm happy Jerry Wilson's back in his natural position. I thought it was only a matter of time before they did that, and it kind of felt like Bradbury was a temporary piece. But Campbell continuing to progress, if there was progressions to be had, Elijah Vera Tucker staying healthy is so big. Because if you go from AVT to Ben Brown and Will Campbell on the left side of the line, a question mark then just continues to grow. So, yeah. Center and left for me is really, I guess, the only, is it fair to say, only major question left on the offensive side of things?
Offense, yeah. I think, you know, tight end, I've liked what I've seen out of Eli Raritan. So, I think if they want to go two tight ends, they can. I think Hunter Henry is a good baseline tight end.
Like, yeah.
I think I like him a little bit more than Jones does, but I think most teams, like, he's right in the middle, right? Like, half the teams you play, you might lose that tight end advantage matchup, but the other half, you're going to win it.
Right.
So, like, I think that's fine.
And now with your wide receiver room being as deep as it is, I can get away with a 15th out of 32 tight end in the league.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's, it's refreshing!